As I dwelled this week with our scripture of the two widows, I imagined women mature in age, with well-worn faces, gray hair, the kind of women you'd want to hear their story of that had lived life. It was much to my surprise, though, as I imagined these women, that my niece kept popping to mind. She was almost two in this memory, and blonde and full of energy and jumping around everywhere. And I kept trying to go back to the women and push the image of Navy Jane out of my mind, but there she was. And so I decided to wander with it as I wondered about the two widows. Last February, my husband and I went to Melbourne to see my sister and her family. They had moved from a mile away from us to halfway across the world about a year and a half before for work, and we missed them. The first Sunday we were there, we loaded Navy into her stroller, and we walked to Melbourne's Anglican Cathedral for worship. When we entered, Navy quickly found a little table that she could sit at next to a pew, and we sat next to her, and she found a plastic teacup and decided that she would be playing tea during the word portion of the service. But as soon as the organ started, she'd look over at us, she'd get a big smile, and she'd plow her way to the middle of the pew where her Uncle David stood. And he would hoist her up, and she would listen and take in the music with delight on her face. And when the music stopped, she'd hop back down and go back to her teacup. Now, when it was time for the Holy Eucharist to begin, I walked over to her, and I scooped her up, and I walked maybe a little further than propriety allows in that space so that we could see the table, so that we could see the bread and wine being made holy. And with her big eyes, she watched the priest lift up the bread, and she said, "Big plate." And I said, "Yes, big plate." And as the priest lifted the wine, she said, "Big cup." And I said, "Yes, big cup." And we stood there and we wondered and we watched. And as worship does, it ended and we headed home. It was not until several days afterwards that I realized why this memory made me so happy, besides that it was a lovely moment with my niece. I realized that as Navy and I heard our Christian story and experienced the wonder of the bread and wine being made holy, that Navy was watching a female priest celebrate. And she had heard a male priest preach as she played tea. Navy's mom, my younger sister, and I grew up in a beautiful tradition, a liturgical tradition. It was also a tradition that did not allow men and women to be ordained. And so our image growing up of priests, of male leadership, was really old guys with white hair. And it was our cultural norm. It was what we knew. And what made me squishy with joy inside at Navy's memory is that her cultural norm is watching men and women in leadership in the church. And what a joy that is. But back to the widows for a moment. We hear today Elijah, the prophet, who is preaching about 500 to 600 years before Jesus' time, and it is not a good time. It's not easy. There's drought, there's famine in all of the land. Elijah is completely dependent at this point upon God's mercy to eat, to live day to day. In fact, right before the passage, Elijah has been fed twice daily by raven meat delivery. Well, that stops working. And so we get to today's passage where God says, "Elijah, I have this widow in Zarephath. Go to her and she will feed you." Well, he does. And he finds her. And she has a few more hesitations than he might have expected. She tells him, "This is my last meal, my only son and I. After we eat this, we are going to die." But something about him, she trusts him, she feeds him, and they do not run out of food. And yet her son dies. And she comes to Elijah and expresses her sadness. And he hears her and he cries out to God. He prostrates himself across her son and he lives. Now, what took a long time in the story to hit me is that the widow of Zarephath was not one of Elijah's people. There were plenty of other widows in that day that God could have sent Elijah to that were of his people. Instead, God chose a foreigner. God chose an outsider to Elijah to give him bread to eat, to live another day. And in that, I hear God's love, including the excluded. Jesus preaches about this story as well earlier in Luke. He preaches about God showing love to people outside of his culture. And this is such a countercultural idea to Elijah's people and to Jesus's that his listeners try to run him off a cliff. Fortunately, he evades death and continues on in his ministry. And eventually we get to today's story. Jesus is traveling to a new place to preach the good news, and he sees a funeral. He sees the widow. He knows that it's her only son's funeral. He knows that not only is she grieving the deep, deep loss of losing her only child, she, in their culture at that day, is grieving the loss of losing her stability, her provider of food, her provider of shelter, her provider of clothing and status. And her life, because of that, may also not be long for this world. Jesus feels compassion on that widow. And he makes a bit of a scene. He walks into a funeral in which he was not invited. He touches an unclean, a dead body, the bier that is resting on, and he restores life. And he gives the widow back her life as well. God's love challenges and transforms our cultural norms and limited imagination in order to draw the widow into his circle and our circle. God's love includes the excluded. And I think this is why Navy kept popping to mind when I was wondering about the widows. For me, that was a small miracle in my life. It was a marker of how I have experienced God's abundant love transform just a teeny portion of the culture in which I live. And as a people following the way of Jesus, we are called into this abundant love. We are called to seek Christ in all people, as it says in our baptismal covenant. We are called to include the excluded. And in that, we know that sometimes it will be hard, and we know that sometimes it will be uncomfortable and we will come up short, but we are called to be there anyway. The challenge for all of us is to wrestle with who those widows are in our life. Who have we been excluding? Is it the people who think slightly differently than us, or the people who vote differently than us? Or is it those who worship in a different way? That one family member, that neighbor that just gets a little bit under our skin. Who is it? Or on the other hand, where do we need to say, I am created by God too, just like you. I am holy too. And I am going to be a part of your community. These are hard questions. They take time. They take a lifetime of faith to answer, to ask, to live, to ask again, and to answer. But I believe if we take the time, God's love will stretch and expand us. And in that stretching and expanding, that love will feel even closer. And for me, the good news today that we hear in these stories is that God's love is abundant enough to include the excluded. And in that, God's love is abundant enough for you, for me, for all of us.